what they were. He talked about some places they show up in nature, like on giraffe skin. Did anyone go look it up? Anyone go look at pictures of giraffes afterwards and be like, yeah, it does look like a Borneo diagram. No? I've been told that's really what's happening, that it is one of these same kind of physical processes that gives rise to Borneo diagrams. And at the very end, I gave this brief description of how you can think about Borneo diagrams and liftings that was analogous to the way we thought about Delaunay triangulations and liftings. Today, we're going to make that precise. Because the precise way to connect Voronoi and Delaunay, although we saw they have a combinatorial duality, we saw that they're duals as polyhedral complexes, and we saw that they give, that not only does the Voronoi diagram and the Delaunay triangulation have a dual, combinatorially dual, but they have this geometric relationship as well, that if you took the Delaunay triangulation to dualize it, if you actually put the dual vertex of any triangle, you put it at the circumcenter of that triangle, and then draw the dual with straight lines, that gives you exactly the Voronoi diagram. Which was different from the way we talked about duality before, which is not different, but more, it has more information than the simple combinatorial duality we used previously, which only said there is a vertex, and there is a dual edge, but we didn't say where geometrically they were. In this case, we really know, we really get a geometric embedding of a dual. This one's maybe not so interesting, because it's only one triangle, but let's take, if we have two triangles, these four points, here's their Delaunay triangulation and their Voronoi diagram overlaid. That's me being lazy, let me put it in color so you can really see the difference. Or this point here is the circumcenter of this other triangle. It's the one in the right. Okay, so in order to get this lifting idea right, we're going to introduce something called projective duality. And it's going to give us a lot of the same stuff we saw for our combinatorial duality, but now it's going to have a real geometric interpretation. So this will also give you a foundation in what's called projective geometry. Or historically, it was sometimes called the non-metric geometry, because it's less concerned with distances. And in fact, it shows up in modern computer graphics, because projective geometry really is taking a projective plane. You can think about taking 3D objects, projecting them onto a plane through a point. That point is usually your eye, or the aperture of a camera, or the focal point, or I guess, of a lens on a camera. And so this idea of taking 3D things, interpreting them, or 2D things, and interpreting them as a slice through three-dimensional space is quite natural. In fact, we already did this, I claim, with homogeneous coordinates. So let me give you one quick picture of this. When we lift things up to the plane z equals 1, so in order to do blindside tests, we took a set of points, say in 2D, we lift them up into 3D by adding z equals 1. So here is the origin of R3. And here's the plane z equals 1. We took the points, we lift them up here. And rather than thinking about these as points in the plane, we thought of them as vectors. So really, they were whole one-dimensional spaces, vector spaces, that is to say, lines through the origin. So we had points, and we pretend that instead they were lines. And we said that, oh, you know that 2D picture you were looking at, which looked like just if I looked at the slice z equals 1? Well, that was really just a slice through a collection of lines that passed through the origin. And so you thought you were looking at points, but really you should have thought of them as lines. This is one dimension higher than we're going to start, though, because we've got to start in a dimension where I can draw some pictures. So let's start with just 2D. So bring this down. Objective duality. Right. So what we want here is a duality in 2D. It's going to be a duality between points and lines. And by duality here, I really mean a map, which is going to take us from any point to a line and any line to a point. And what makes it a duality is that if I dualize the dual, I get back to the original. One simple case of this, one realization of this kind of projective duality, is if you just take points on a circle. Okay, here I've drawn their convex hull. So we've seen the convex hull problem. If you take, and you remember, the input to the convex hull problem was a set of points. We said you take points, and you get a convex polygon. We also talked about polyhedra, and this definition of polyhedra was, rather than thinking about the convex closure of a set of points, we looked at the intersection of half spaces. Okay, so rather than thinking about this polygon being defined by the vertices, you can think of it then instead as being defined in terms of the edges. So we already have this kind of two ways of viewing polygons, and we'll see this come up right now when. And for each of these points on a circle, what I'll do is I'll dualize it to the line tangent to the circle. Okay, now if I took the intersection of all the half spaces where I direct them towards the circle, I get some different polygon. I get this, maybe I'll just erase the extra stuff, and I get this polygon, and which I wish I hadn't highlighted some of these vertices in red. Let me just make sure you know that those vertices are still black, and they're not part of this red polygon. And these two polygons are now also combinatorially dual. Probably too many vertices, but let's see, I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 vertices. So if I took the black one and I draw its poset, what do I have? I've got 6 vertices and 6 edges. Here are the vertices, here are the edges, and the poset looks like this. It's an advanced trick to be able to draw that one fast. Let me label some of these. So this is vertex 1 and vertex 2. We'll call this, say, edge 1. This is V1 and V2. This is V1. You can see that each edge connects the two adjacent ones, and this edge connects the first to the last. So you should believe that this is the poset. And if you look at the dual, what do we really have? Each of these vertices became an edge. And two of these red lines intersect at a vertex. So that, but where previously we had the convex closure of those two vertices forming an edge, now we have the intersection of their duals forming a vertex. So if I flip this upside down, I'll get the poset of the red polygon. And you should already be able to see that this has some symmetry, because this, although this graph looks a little weird perhaps, it's just a cycle. Like, I can redraw this. Maybe if I drew this edge coming around the outside, you would see that this graph is just a cycle, and every other vertex is labeled as a vertex or an edge. If I just switch the labeling, that's flipping the poset upside down. So remember, flipping the post set was our combinatorial duality, and now we're going to arrive at the more geometric version. Okay, so this is by far the most popular way of describing projective duality, and except in computational geometry. We have our own way, a different way. What way you've seen before, rather than trying to reflect things around or use the tangents to a circle, we're going to use a parabola. There are good computational reasons for doing this. Let me just draw you an example of that. So if this is our parabola, and I have points on a parabola, I'm going to take the tangent lines to the parabola. And now when the convex hull, the lower hull, is going to dualize to the upper, what's called the upper envelope. It's the polyhedron formed by these lines where we take the half space above every one of these lines. So given lines one Ln, the upper envelope of lines is the polyhedron formed by intersecting half spaces above the lines. So already you get a hint for why this is going to be related to the line triangulation, right? At lower hull, what, at least if we were to have these points on a paraboloid in 3D, that lower hull would project right down onto the 2D convex hull. I'm sorry, onto the 2D Dolan triangulation. And so this tells us a way to kind of turn points on a parabola into lines. But we want this duality to be more general than that. We don't want to just take points on a circle in this case, or points on a parabola and turn them into lines, but we want to be able to find a dual for any point or any line. Has anyone seen this before? Has anyone taken a graphics class? Okay. Not that this would come up in a graphics class, but I don't know what I'm dealing with. Okay. So, part of the reason we're going to care about duality is, like the combinatorial duality, one of the main reasons we talked about this combinatorial duality was that we could represent two different objects in the same way. Like that one, the representation of, say, the planar straight line graph could also encode the representation of its dual. And we're going to find that this is the same thing will happen now if you have a collection, for instance, if you have an input which is a collection of lines, it may be more natural to talk about it as a collection of points. And the some of the properties of this duality will mean that it's just as useful to have the points as it is to have their dual lines. And also, sometimes it's even easier to do computations in the dual than it is in the primal. So I should say that when I talk about the original set, before I dualize it, that's the primal, and then we dualize it and we get the dual. So if I have a set of points, is the primal set, and the dual is a set of lines, and vice versa. So like combinatorial duality, we want one representation, and you can think of representations as data structures. one representation to have multiple interpretations. And I claim that points and lines already have a shared representation. So if I asked you to have a data structure which stores, say you're writing Java code or something, you have a class for a line, what information do you need to put in that class? A two-dimensional line, one common way to represent a two-dimensional line, say L, would be the set of all points, x, y, such that, pick your favorite definition of a line. How about y equals mx plus b? You know this one, so it should be that y is equal to the slope of the line, I'll call that lm, times x plus lb, which is what the y-intercept. Everyone has seen this before? Yes? No? Some people are... Who has not seen this before? So it's okay. This is this definition of a line. Okay, so slope, intercept, form of a line. It's very useful. We will probe its limits. Here, of course, to store this information, all you needed to store is this and this. So you have just a pair, LM and LB, which are two real numbers. And so now I'm saying that you could store a line just by storing two real numbers. You have all the information you need, for instance, to decide some points on that line, do line type tests, you can pull off. It's normal. This is all you need. And of course, this is exactly the same way we represent points, just a pair of real numbers. So you might hope that that's our duality. That you say, oh, well, I take a pair of real numbers representing a line, and I just move it over here, and I just call it a point. Doesn't work. It's close. It's almost good. Let me put a big X on this so you don't get confused. It's gonna be very much like this, but it's gonna be different before I show you what it looks like as in this what we might call the coordinate representation of a line and a point. Let me show you what's closer to perhaps the Euclidean version. So here. We were comfortable saying for a point on the parabola, you just take the tangent line to the parabola. But it didn't give us enough information to dualize any point because we could have a point which was not on the parabola. Say a point over here. So to dualize a point not on the parabola, what we can do instead is we could take the tangent line to the parabola that passes through that point. Well, there's two of them. So let's take them both. Okay. And that gives us two points on the parabola, and now we'll take the line through those two points. Okay. So we're going to call this line P star. And I'm going to use star to represent duality. And again, because it's a duality, we really want it to be the case that P star is equal to P. So here we can now use the same idea to define, for instance, the dual to a line. If I take a line L, I look at the two points where it crosses the parabola, I take their tangents, and I look at their intersection to get L star. It's pretty good, right? Doesn't tell the whole story yet, does it? Because what about if the point P is inside here? It's pretty hard to draw a tangent to the parabola that passes through P. Anyone have any ideas? Here's one. Let's take any old line through P. Now, here's a line that passes through P. And we can look at the dual to that line gives us a point. Alright, that's helpful. We didn't want a point, and we also chose this line sort of arbitrarily. What did we want? We wanted a line. Well, let's take another one. I don't know where this one comes from. Somewhere over here, I get another point. In fact, for every line I pass through P, I'm going to get a point. And, well, when we get some set of points, I claim that the set of points I will get will, in fact, all lie on the line. And this is a really bad example. I've drawn this poorly, but imagine it'll be somewhere over here. I actually know more precisely what this will look like because I know some things I haven't told you yet. The slope of this line will be something like this. If I were to be very careful about checking where those intersections were, I'd get some line like this. And this will be P star. Okay, but how did I really get there? I've had to use an idea which is going to be integral to duality, and that is that incidence is preserved by duality. I'll say this again, ready? Incidence is preserved by duality. Now, incidence was defined, we talked about it just as a set theoretic notion. It was just inclusion. So we said that P and L, for a point P and a line L, are incident if P is a point on that line. So if we have a point on a line, and we view this line as a set of points, it's a set of all points on the line, as I've written here. This is true if and only if the point that's dual to the line, is contained in the line that's dual to the point. This is incidence preservation. Okay, so now if I took all the lines that contain this point P, it should come out to be a set of points. The dual to that set of lines, this is a set of points, which all have to be incident to the line dual to P. So this incidence preservation implies that this kind of construction is correct. So let's walk through it just very slowly. I have a point, and I know that somewhere I'm going to have a dual line, and that dual line is going to contain the point dual to any line that contains the point. So any line that I pass through here, I know how to construct its dual, and it's dual of the line on the dual line. P star.
Question.
Yeah.
How do you know that the lines, that line's slope is going to be exactly that?
How do I know that the lines, there's two possible interpretations of your question. First, why do I know that incidence will be preserved? Or how am I going to?
If I
Hello.
All right. That's good. That's nice. I'm going to answer your question on the microphone, so make it a good one.
So if the incidence is preserved, then that line, the red line, P star, it could have any slope, right? How do you know that that is going to be the slope?
Yeah, why was I able to have such confidence in when I wrote it?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to give you the answer.
In the microphone.
No, actually,
I can't do it in the microphone. Oh, that's so weird.
All right, sorry about that. Very distractible. I'm going to tell you the answer, and then we'll see why. So if you don't understand what I'm about to say, that's okay. It will be clear later, but if you want to see it, here it is. If I took the point, I drop it straight down, and I take a tangent, it's going to be parallel. Okay? And in fact, other than that, this distance will equal this distance. All right, so I'm going to give you what the actual duality is. Like I said, it's not this, but it's almost this. And we'll see that this is true. Any questions? Besides, why is that, right? So I like to call this duality reflection across a parabola. It hasn't really caught on yet, but I think it will. So you should use this vocabulary too. Partly because the usual case is often called reflection across a circle. And you can imagine doing that same operation with a circle. If I took a point, say this point, and took the two tangent lines, well, what do you know? I look at the intersection, the dual for this point is exactly this edge. So you could do the same reflection across a circle, and you can do it across an ellipse. You could pick any conic section, in fact, and do the same construction. All the same, many of the same, at least incidence preservation will still work, but the parabola has a nice property that, as we saw with when we lifted points up onto a parabola with the Tolmin triangulation, that's just adding one coordinate. If I want to map points onto a circle, I kind of have to change every coordinate. So you can do something called a stereographic projection onto a sphere. In fact, you can even do the line triangulation. Instead of lifting onto a paraboloid, you can do stereographic projection onto a sphere. You could do that. It all works. You kind of have to mess with all the coordinates of the point. So the lifting is nice in that it just changes the last coordinate. Let's see how you do it. So if P is our point, and let's call it PX, PY. And we want to go to the P star, which is a line. And it should have a plane. We're going to, using this representation of a line, where it's just a slope intercept, we're going to take it to 2 times px to negative py. Similarly, a line L, pretend I just drew the arrow one way, it's going to be the same. From a line which had LM, LB, it's going to go to L star, which is a point, and that point should kind of reverse this operation of duality, so it goes to 1/2 LM, and it gets a negative LB. So let's check that we really do have a duality. And so it should be the case that P star star equals P. So let's start with P, which was PX, PY. We took it to P star, which was 2PX, negative PY. And then if we took it to P star star, what did we have to do? This was, we took half of the first term. That puts us down with px, so it's 1/2 of 2px, this is px, and we take the negative of the second term, so negative of negative py is again is py. Life is good, it's proper duality. You can check that this is true for the last three.
Is it another typo, right?
Yes, it is, sorry about that. We don't, this is not just a typo, it's a type error. Because it's a, okay. Check your types, good, thank you. You can check this. This is also true for lines. Actually, just repeat this again. Assume that this starting as the line.
So it holds for any number of dimensions, right? And
Well, let's see. There's this slight problem that I don't know slope-intercept form for even 3D.
Okay, so that's simulation.
In fact, it does work in any number of dimensions. And I guess technically I do know what slope-intercept form would be in any number of dimensions. I'll write it for you again. You get ahead of me a little bit, but it's worth seeing. A point, I'll just write like this for a second, x, y, z, in 3D, will dualize across a parabola to 2x, 2y, negative z. Now, if you remember your calculus, and it's easy because I did it all, it's just a 1D kind of example, you know how to find the tangent line to a parabola, through a point. Okay. The tangent to the parabola is just the function y equals x squared. So if this is just y equals x squared, you know that the slope of the tangent is just dy to the x, it's just 2x. So the slope at px is 2x, okay. Which you see is sort of in here. Let's check that we really do get the tangent lines to the parabola just by doing this. So I claim that this is, in fact, just the slope-intercept form. If given a point on the parabola, this is the slope-intercept form of the line and tangent to the parabola at that point. Okay. Here's the point. Yes, PY. I take the line here. We know that its slope is 2px. And the y-intercept down here, well, the claim is that this is the point 0, negative, y. Okay. The reason for that is, well, if this slope is negative 2px, it has to cover a distance of px backwards. How far is it going to drop over that distance? It's going to drop 2px squared. This x distance is px, and as you go this way, it goes down at a rate of negative 2px per unit distance. So this change here, from here to here, is 2px squared, which is great because half of that is just the origin. This is just equal to 2py rather, because remember, px squared is just py, that's the equation of the parabola, and you just cut in half, so you get, go down py gets you to zero, go down another py and you get right. High school calculus stuff. Alright, so let's prove that this particular duality, I claimed it over there, let's prove that this duality preserves incidence. And then we'll prove that it actually preserves something even better than incidence, which is that it preserves above and below relationships.
I mean,
So in other words, we want to prove that P is in L if and only if L star is in P star. Okay, so pick any point P. That we're going to write as px, py, and p star, by the definition of duality, is the set of all points x, y, such that y equals, it's going to be mx plus p, what's m is 2px, plus b, b is the y-intercept, which is going to be negative py. This is going to be dual. And if we take any line L, which is equal to, again, the points x, y, such that y equals the slope of L times x plus the y-intercept, then L star is just going to be the point negative 1, 1 half negative. Okay, so that's just setting things up here, and now we just check that if P is in L, right, for a given point and a given line, P is an element of L if and only if it's this point satisfies this equation. So it has to be the case that Py is equal to Lm Px plus Lb. Okay. But that's true if and only if, these if double arrows mean if and only if, that's, by rearranging this, that means that Lb is equal to, negative Lb is equal to Lm Px minus Py. And this works for us because this is true if and only if now negative Lb is equal to, I'm gonna rearrange this to be 2px times 1 half Lm. Minus py, and we can just check that this here, this first term, is the y coordinate of L star. This is the slope of P star. This is the x coordinate of L star. And y is the y-intercept of P star.
It's supposed to be Lm minus Pm?
Yeah, so P star is a line that has a slope and an intercept.
Oh, okay.
Right, so that's true. This means that this times this plus this. This is the same as saying that L star contained in P star, right? Because L star has a point x, y, the y is equal to the x times the slope plus the intercept. Exactly the definition of inclusion. And so this proves both directions, because every step is if and only if. Not bad, right? Any questions? Alright, I'm going to strengthen this. So not only does this particular duality preserve incidence, it also preserves what we're going to call the above-below relationships. So for any line that's not vertical, At any point, you can talk about whether or not whether that point is above or below the line. So for this line L, I have a point. The way I, if it, as long as that line is not vertical, it's above the line if I have to go down to hit the line. It's below the line if I have to go up to hit the line. And only one of these two things is true. And the way you can just check them is that you replace the line with a half space. If you want to write this line as a half space above the line, you would say that y is just what? Greater than or equal to the equation of the line. So I go through here and I just write this this way. This would be my half space. Let me write the statements here. It's above line L if Py is greater than or equal to this, which is still true here. I just write it like this. This is the same now as saying that L star is above D star. Okay, so not only do we have incidence, but the vertical ordering of things is preserved. There was this caveat, though, which we'll explore a little more, but it assumes that L is not vertical. Why is that a problem? Obviously, it's hard, you can't define above and below for a vertical line, but that's not where the problem comes in. The problem comes in even earlier than this. It comes in with something I said right from the beginning, or I guess I've already erased it, which was that you can represent a line as y equals mx plus b. But you can't really represent any line that way. You do run into this like problem that you try to represent a vertical line as y equals mx plus b. What's the slope of a vertical line? It seems to be infinite. This is not as big a problem as you might think. We could pretend, for instance, that we're allowed to stick infinity in here. Let's say that I write a line as infinity in B. I would still claim to get a point here, but I would get a point whose x-coordinate was at infinity. And I guess it may not intercept the y-axis at all. And what we find is we kind of are secretly running into the problem parallels. So way back when, actually when we talked a little bit about Euclid's elements, in the fifth axiom or postulate of Euclid, this parallel postulate has this funny statement which says that if you take two lines and you cut them with a third line and you look at the angles formed by these three lines, depending on how big those angles are, there's either an intersection on one side or an intersection on the other side or no intersection. And I claim that this problem with the lines that can't be represented here is actually a problem with using coordinates to represent points in projective geometry, is that we leave out some of these infinite points. And you may have heard people say this before, that like, well, you imagine that parallel lines intersect at infinity, and that there's some points out there at infinity where some parallel lines can intersect. Well, that's exactly the kind of points we would have to add to this system in order to also represent vertical lines. So those points at infinity, where parallel lines intersect, are really just the duals to vertical lines in this duality, which we're going to work out, I think, in detail next time. I like to usually get people play with it a little bit. So let's check, though, now, since we have that the above-below relationship is preserved, we can really talk about lower hulls and upper envelopes. Let's do that. So, is this red more visible than the black? Given a set of points, P1 to Pn, so let's call that a set P, label the points. In the lower hull, we have Pi, Pj, this line segment is in the lower hull. If and only if, I'll draw those two points here. This is Pi, this is Pj. What must be true? It must be the case that all the other points are above the line through them. So if and only if for all k other than ij here, Pk is above this line, the I, so this is the whole line, this is just the line segment. So you can take this kind of statement and do what you might call pushing it through the duality. So this is just a sentence. But the sentence now, because the duality is true, we can just restate it in the dual. And what we'll arrive at is the upper envelope. See, the upper envelope said that we're going to take the duals to each of these points, Pi, so there's some line here, Pi star, and there's some other line here, Pj star. Here, which line I'm drawing? Pj star. And I take this intersection, this vertex. The upper envelope, recall, is the intersection of all the half spaces above these lines. This is a vertex. Pi star intersects Pj star is a vertex of the upper envelope. If and only if I don't even have to look, I'm just going to restate everything here, but in the dual. So for all k other, oh, sorry. God, catch me on this stuff. All k not in ij, right? I need all other points. So all k not in ij, pk star. The dualizing relationship switches the order. So I want to say that this thing, which is a point, is going to be above the dual line, Pk star. So Pi star intersect Pj star is above Pk star. So the original convex hull problem, or this part of it, which is just the lower hull version, is a little bit like asking for a change in the representation. The input was a set of points, and the output is a set of edges. And the upper envelope, if given a set of lines, or the output is going to be a polygon described by what the set of vertices. Things to notice here is that the intersection of two lines is standing in for this, which is the convex closure of two points. Really, it's you should think of this as the line. We're thinking about this line is a supporting line of the lower hull. And that line is going to, in this dual version, is the intersection of the two dual lines. Why is that the case? Well, you know, you take two distinct points, you can draw a straight line through them. You take two non-parallel lines, you can take their intersection. That's why here you've got two points, you take the line through it. Here you have two lines, you take their intersection.
So what is the upper envelope with respect to the dual line?
What's that?
The upper envelope.
Oh, that's what we just defined before. It's the intersection, the upper envelope, yeah. So in this case, it's the upper envelope of P1 star to PN star of this set of lines. All right, so I hinted that there was already an answer here. You might ask, what about 3D? In fact, 3D is where things really get interesting, because to solve 2D problems, you lift them into 3D. To solve Delaunay triangulation in 2D, you lift it into 3D, and you looked at the lower hull in 3D, and now I claim that by this projective duality, that lower hull is dual to the upper envelope, and that upper envelope projects down to the Voronoi diagram. So this duality between Delaunay triangulation and Voronoi diagrams is actually a projective duality. Okay. Since we built this up from the start in terms of tangents to the paraboloid, the paraboloid in 2D is just the parabola. But in general, you're lifting onto a paraboloid. And you can remember that, in this case, the paraboloid in R3 is just the graph of the function, or the equation, z equals x squared plus y squared. In general, it's going to be for P equals P1 to P D, we're going to have PD equals the sum from I equals 1 to D minus 1 PI squared. Sorry for the overlap in notation here. These are the coordinates of the point P. So this would be the d-dimensional paraboloid. Here it is in 3D. What's nice about this as well, especially if you want to do this in terms of your high school calculus, is that you also know how this is just a you can compute the tangent to this as well. But in fact, what you really care about is the degree. So if P, let's do the 2D version first. If P is equal to a point Px, Py, Pz, we're going to dualize it to P star, and it should be now not a line, but a hyperplane, or a plane in 3D. P star is equal to the set of all x, y, z, such that z is equal to 2px plus 2py minus pz.
Yeah.
You're right?
Yeah.
But these twos really are just coming from differentiating these terms.
So partially differentiating with respect to x and y.
Yeah, so you can do it out if you like, or we can also just chip. You can do the calculus out, and you'll see that you're just taking this tangent plane. This is really saying that I have a paraboloid in R3, and I take a point, and I ask about this tangent plane. If I want to describe the tangent plane, the easiest way to do that is to take the normal, right? And so the normal, is this vector here, which is 2px, it's 2, negative 1. We can just go over here, in fact. If you look at what we did, and we treat this as, instead of as a single coordinate, but as a two-dimensional point now, actually everything goes through the same. I'm not going to redo that whole proof because it's literally exactly the same, and we find that the duality here also preserves incidence and the above-below relationship. But the important thing I guess I forgot to write here is that the duality is going to be points dualizing back and forth to hyperplanes. Okay, and so the dimensions will add up the way they're supposed to, just as in the combinatorial duality. Remember that in the combinatorial duality we have points, the zero-dimensional things dualize to the d-dimensional things, and then the one-dimensional things dualize to the d-minus-one-dimensional things, and vice versa, and going all the way up in dimension. So that gives us the d-dimensional version. I guess the one thing we haven't yet really seen is why this duality, why this lifting version gives us a combinatorial duality. I kind of hinted at it. In 2D, it's not so hard to believe because in 2D, well, it's the dual of a convex polygon. It's going to be another convex polygon. The number of vertices stays the same. The number of edges stay the same. In order to get the full effect here, you have to look at how now if you took intersections of three hyperplanes, you're going to dualize to you would start if you start let's start up with the prime one here. If you had three points, you need three points to define a plane in R3. And so you're going to end up with intersection of three planes in R3. It's going to give you a point. If you tried to do the same idea here and just took a pair of points gives you a line. The intersection of two planes gives you a line. Well, that's good, right? We expect that in the combinatorial duality to dualize lines to lines, one-dimensional things to one-dimensional things. And so the same thing will hold true. Let's go through a little more detail, though, on this question of parallels and points at infinity. Okay. So if I have a line. What is the set the dual of the set of all lines parallel to L? This is a question for you to think about for a second here. So here's a line L. And now I'm taking all these other lines that are parallel. And I want to describe them in terms of the dual. Dual L star is equal to 1/2 minus LV. If this is some other line parallel to L, then Ln will be the same. And so if there's a point, if this is our point, L star, every other line that's parallel in the dual will have the same x-coordinate as L star. And so what you get is that the set of lines parallel to L, put in a different color, in the dual is exactly a vertical line. And that's pretty cool, right? Because with the dual, now it's telling me that when I want to dualize L star, if I want to dualize this vertical line, I'm going to get the intersection of all of these, the set of lines, the common intersection of all of these lines. And so it's a point, but it's not a point with an x and y coordinate. It's a point at infinity. It's a particular point at infinity corresponding to things with this slope. Now, if we took a different line, so if I had some, let's call it L bar here, I have a different slope, a smaller slope, it's going to dualize to some L bar star, which is some different vertical line. And so for every vertical line, I get a different point at infinity. So I get a whole lot of points at infinity. I get one for every x-coordinate, right? For every x-coordinate, I can have a vertical line with that x. And so I actually get an entire line of points at infinity. And so when I look, if you look at all the lines you can represent, you actually only have to add one line to this space, this one line at infinity, which describes all of these intersections at infinity. Now there's another interpretation which goes back to the lifting in homogeneous coordinates. So this is important. It's time to go. So there's a sense, a real sense in which you've already done this. On the last homework. So here is the plane z equals 1 again. And here's some points in the plane. Because we test points in 2D, we lift them into R3 by giving them a z coordinate. And we said, oh, well, really, these are lines here through these points. Or we thought of them as vectors. Right? But this was a way that we got to go from talking about points to talking about vectors, so that when we had points A, B, and C, it actually meant something to take the determinant of A1, B1, C1. Whereas otherwise, we had to turn them into vectors. This was, of course, equal to the determinant of a pair of vectors, B minus A, C minus A. So now, if the points in the projected plane are really lines through the origin,
well, that's the dual of the plane is the dual of all those.
We're not going to dualize this plane yet, but let's just watch. If we take a point and we start moving a point out to infinity, let's start moving it farther and farther out. Eventually, the line will tip all the way down, and when the line is horizontal, it doesn't actually intersect this plane. But you still have, if you talk about the lines, the set of all lines to the origin, there are some that are horizontal. There are some that don't intersect this plane, and so you don't get a point in this plane, but those are exactly the points at infinity. So there's this one-to-one relationship between points in what we're going to call the projective plane, right? They are in correspondence with lines through the origin in R3. Now something else funny happens as you just consider lines through the origin, is that once I get horizontal, if I keep rotating a little bit more, I show up back on the other side. Right? The intersection of the line, as this one gets more and more horizontal, and it goes just a little bit down, it comes up, and now the intersection goes from, we walk right off the edge of space here, and we walk right back on the other side. So it's like Pac-Man or any of these computer games where space sort of connects, but it's not like Pac-Man, because Pac-Man is a torus, and the projective plane is not the same as a torus. That's important to know, because if you walk off in any direction, you come back on the exact opposite point, and that comes from thinking about these lines as being a little bit directed. So if I take this line and I start rotating it around, I don't have to rotate it all the way around to get back to the same line. If I rotate it only halfway around, I still get also the same line. So there's this identification of these points at infinity. And that's also why, if you want to think about the point at infinity as being arbitrarily in one direction, and that point at infinity is the intersection of two parallel lines, that's why it makes sense to talk about that intersection being either at infinity this way, or both. It's not actually in either direction. Which, interestingly enough, is exactly how Euclid stated his fifth postulate. Any questions on this? There was a question that kept coming up, and I apologize. So I took some of the administrative stuff from last year. I'm not actually